Hey, Steve, thanks for having me.
So let's do this in chronological order, and part of the chronological order is Micah Shrewsbury being hired to be the head basketball coach at Penn State. What was your thought on the hire?
I thought that the first and foremost, I think if you're Sandy Barber and you make a list in your head and go, these are the guys that I want, knowing that Shrewsbury was up there at the top of the list, I think any time that you can finish off a coaching search with one of the guys that you wanted is always a good sign. I think that, you know, there's going to be all sorts of questions in terms of recruiting, in terms of what it's like to actually have him, you know, doing things throughout the game. But I think at the end of the day, with the money that Penn State has to spend, with what they wanted and what they're looking for, I think the pedigree that he brings to the table is hard to argue with. And certainly, the rest of it will fall in place in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think a lot of people talk about the head coaching part of it, but let's face it, he will now be the fifth coach in the Big Ten, the fifth coach in the Big Ten that did not have any Division I head coaching experience when he started his current job. Juwan Howard, Greg Gard, Tom Izzo, Chris Collins, and now Micah Shrewsbury. So obviously it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that every good coach has their first gig. You know, I think it's a different sport, but, you know, Urban Meyer kind of came up the ranks and became Urban Meyer. And that's not to say that Micah Shrewsbury is on the same trajectory, but, you know, you've got to have that first gig. You've got to have that experience. And I think, you know, the fact that Brad Stevens, the fact that Matt Painter to me is one of the most underrated, underappreciated coaches in college basketball, if not the country and just sports in general. I think for both of those guys to have their stamp of approval on him and really sort of the praise that they've had for him over the years, I think those sorts of things speak volumes a lot more than, you know, what does his resume say.
Your thoughts on allowing him to stay with Purdue through the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, the fate of Penn State basketball is not going to be determined in the next 2 weeks. If he wants to finish what he started with that program, I think that's more than fine. Obviously, there's some personnel things to figure out. There's some roster management to deal with. But at the end of the day, you know, those guys are on a journey themselves, and they deserve to finish it with all the guys they started with.
So now let's get to the roster management part. Part of it would not hurt him from a starting point to retain as many of the current roster as possible. You now have six names in the portal. What's your thought on that, especially the five that entered today?
Yeah, I mean, I think we knew that this was coming for a lot of different reasons. I think we knew that there was going to be this moment where the season comes to an end and the new coach is named and these guys are going to go places. And, you know, I think it's a complex situation, but it really isn't. I think if we boil it all down to everything that it was, it's just these guys have not been particularly happy for most of the year about how certain things were handled regarding Pat Chambers and frankly, you know, just sort of their feel for the administration at this point. Obviously, you know, guys might want to, you know, look for different playing opportunities or want to look for other things, but I think it just sort of boils down to guys that are not particularly happy. You can't speak for all of them, obviously, but I think that's the general vibe. So, you know, the interesting thing is going to be, can he get these guys in a room and say, look, you know, I get it. You're not happy, or maybe you weren't happy, or maybe you kind of want to, you know, stick it to the man or something like that. But this is what I'm about. This is what I want to do. And this is why you should stay. Is that going to be enough to keep a guy like Jamari Wheeler in town? That seems unlikely. But I imagine he's going to hear that pitch if nothing else. And, you know, they're going to go from there. But the good news, I think, is at this point, if you look at least who is in the portal and who isn't in the portal, if they can keep their freshmen, if they can keep Seth Lundy and Miles Dredd, and guys like that, that's not a bad core to work with. And the transfer portal itself is such a different dynamic than, you know, what Pat Chambers dealt with after DeChellis left. You know, just the fact that you can go and sort of not pick and choose, but shop a little differently than before. It's not an ideal circumstance, but I think the fact that everyone, Shrewsbury probably included, seeing this coming, it sort of is what it is at this point.
There's also another element to it, as Lamont Wade and Cam Sullivan Brown showed. You can put your name in, but you can also decide to come back.
Yeah, and that very well could happen. I mean, you know, these guys, you know, Myron Jones could put his name in. Now, granted, I'm sure that there are a lot of college basketball teams out there that would like a guy like that. But you could put your name in and decide to come back, and very well, you know, that very well could happen. So you just don't know. I think it's great that in general that these guys have the opportunity to see what their value is out there on the market, if you will. But certainly, you know, the pitch for any coach that has to take over a new job or try and maintain a roster is to, hey, come back and see what I'm about.
All right. There is only one verbal in the recruiting class. Now, obviously, there's the transfer portal. But with all this, what kind of hill does he have to climb, at least initially, to get it where I'm sure he hopes it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how this sort of unpacks itself over the next couple of weeks, because I think, you know, we knew that Jim Ferry had some guys lined up that would commit if he got the job. I'm sure that,
yeah,
that, you know, that there are guys out there right now that they're maybe more interested in Penn State than they were before. I think a little bit, you know, between the transfer portal and between the freshmen that they have, they can maybe get away with not having a particularly interesting 21 class. You know, you want to do something for 22. And I think that's really where the assistants that end up getting hired are going to be really crucial, because Shrewsbury's got a great, you know, resume. But the fact of the matter is he's not spent a lot of time in Philadelphia, although Purdue has pulled two pretty good,
yes,
Pennsylvania prospects out of Philly over the last couple of years. They've got one incoming in next year or the year after that,
yes,
and one already on the way. So there is some familiarity there. Obviously, his time in Boston helps a little bit as well, just sort of being a face that people might recognize. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be the challenge, and that's always been sort of the existential challenge for Penn State basketball. Can you get into Philadelphia? But, you know, I imagine that he knows this. There's certainly a lot of schools in Philadelphia that have assistant coaches that has spent a lot of time in the city that might be interested, mm-hmm, in taking a Big Ten role. So it'll be interesting to see which direction that goes. But there's no doubt that, you know, I think everybody agrees he has the X's and O's down. The challenge is, can you get the talent to match it?
With everything that's happened on the basketball front, obviously, it's always odd around here to think that for the moment Penn State football starting spring practice for the first time in 2 years actually gets pushed back a little bit. Yesterday, James Franklin had his press conference. What were your initial thoughts after listening to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for the most part, I think they're just glad to have something normal. And obviously, not everything about this spring practice is going to be normal.
No.
But if you look at all the ups and downs that they had last year with how they started and installing a new offense and dealing with all these different things and really just all sort of, you know, the oddities of everything, because I think the thing that people forget is that, you know, spring ball was very much at the beginning of the pandemic. This was when, mm-hmm, you know, we were under the illusion we were going to quarantine for 2 weeks and everything was going to be fine. And you know, for them to sort of navigate that the first time, you're going to have a lot of bumps on the road. So I think, you know, it's still going to be strange, but for the most part, I think, you know, they made it through the season. They figured out how they want to do this. And now, you know, I think the weird thing about it is you've got, you know, really six guys on that staff that have never done spring ball with this program before.
That's
you've
right.
got a lot of freshmen that have never done spring ball before. You know, spring ball is not rocket science, and these guys have done football for most of their lives, so they'll figure it out. But, you know, I do think it's sort of like a hit the reset, forget about last year, and just kind of move forward. And ultimately, you know, it's like they say, you can never get too high, never get too low. And I think at this point, they're just glad to be back out there.
Obviously, it's one thing for a position coach to go through this, but there also is a coordinator in Mike Yurcich. We saw, of course, last year, you know, trying to fight from behind in that regard. Having Mike out there the entire time and going through a spring practice, what do you think that can mean for Sean Clifford and for this offense?
I think it's huge. I mean, I think for an offensive coordinator and his offense to, you know, take up the same physical space and be able to have hands on and be able to really, you know, work these kinks out on the field, to be able to point at things and say, you go here, rather than trying to, you know, learn how to teach. You know, that's huge, because I think one of the things that people don't think about is, oh, these guys are all very good coaches. Kirchrock is a fine coach, but the one thing that is difficult to do is to figure out how to be a fine coach over Zoom. And that is a challenge that none of these guys are prepared for. And you kind of work your way through it and figure it out. But now that they can be back on the field, they can look each other in the eye, they can, you know, have that sort of physicality. And, you know, obviously, you know, social distancing and what have you aside, you know, I think that's huge because it's really, you know, football is a physical game. Football is, you know, they talk about mental reps, but at the end of the day, you know, nothing exchanges and nothing's better than if you're talking about running a 5 yard out, running a 5 yard out. So I think all of these things is going to be huge for the installation of the offense, huge for Sean Clifford, and really huge for them to, you know, we'll see how good the offense is or is not this year. But the fact that it doesn't have to overcome the oddities of the situation in front of, you know, everything that just comes with learning a new offense, I think that's going to be huge.
All right, I'm going to get back to a comment you made in a moment, but I want to get to this. In spring practice, once we get through to practice 15, what are you looking for and what interests you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the biggest things are going to be what does that defensive line look like without some of the names we've been familiar seeing. Obviously, the blue-white game has never been the sort of thing where you can glean much from the quarterbacks, and we've seen enough of Sean Clifford to know, you know, the good and the bad that he can have at any moment. But I do think, you know, if he can go out there and throw the ball and look a little bit more like his 2019 self, that goes a long way. You know, how do the receivers look? How does the defense look? You know, the blue white's one of those things where you try not to put too much stock in.
Exactly.
And everyone goes, you know, you have to write six stories about the scrimmage and you go, well, yeah, they definitely look like they were playing football. You know, so, you know, I think there's definitely lots of question marks for this team, but I think the good thing about recruiting and when you recruit well is, you know, if you've got a lot of talent, it's just a matter of plugging guys in. And if I've learned anything about the last 12 years or the last 12 months, excuse me, it's I guess I'll just see when they show up in Madison what exactly they look like.
All right, so now I'm going to go back to a comment you made in there about the difficulty of trying to then talk through Zoom, all right, to players. Now I'm going to apply it to the basketball part. What kind of detriment is that at this moment for Micah Shrewsbury? Because he's the kind of guy that I sense, you know, like I said, I've only said hi to him a couple of times, so I'm not going to sit here and be an expert like I've had this involved conversation with him yet, and, you know, that's not true. I've only said hi to him a couple of times. But you sense in seeing him talk and him being interviewed and so forth that he is a very engaging personality. But right now that engaging personality is coming over Zoom and it's not face-to-face. How tough is that in this particular situation for him that's how it has to be done?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. And I think it's definitely difficult from the relationship-building aspect. You know, we were talking about
good point
whether or not you know, some of these guys want to come back or not, or the whole transfer portal aspect of that. And it's just different. You know, you and I can look at each other on Zoom and I can see you and you can see me, but it's not the same thing as, you know, the literal in-person breaking of bread and conversating and everything mm-hmm. that happens, you know, that way. So I think it's difficult. I think from the basketball perspective, they will be fine because basketball players are used to watching lots of film and things like that. But I think, you know, when it comes to this is who I am and this is what I'm about and
yes.
and you should believe me, you should trust me, these things are difficult to sell over Zoom. And that's not his fault. It's not the situation's fault. It just sort of is what it is. But there's no doubt it makes for an interesting couple weeks here as he tries to get his feet underneath him.
Ben, thank you so much for the time and the insight. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Steve. That's-